Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network with the Dankoff Report here on Friday, December the 6th. I'm away from my usual studio location, which is still undergoing some renovations, so I hope you'll bear with me in terms of any possible technical difficulties, but I think we should probably manage just fine today. We've got all kinds of stories to cover for you, most of them international in origin. And in this particular case, the thing that I find myself being constantly amazed by is how fast these events are going. The ball seems to be rolling down the hill and gathering more snow by the second in terms of all kinds of difficulties. And, of course, this would seem to play right into the hands of these neoconservatives and Zionists that clearly continue to run American foreign policy. Here's one for you, folks. If you thought Victoria Nuland was going to go away, she has just recently rejoined the board of the National Endowment for Democracy. Any connection between that and some of these recent events going on in Syria, going on in Georgia, going on in Romania? I suspect there probably is a connection, and we'll want to watch that one very closely. In the meantime, as we look at the situation in Syria, it is absolutely amazing that after everything that supposedly had been settled in the Syrian civil war between 2011 and 2019, it appeared that there was at least some stability that had taken place in that country subsequent to the Russian military intervention on behalf of the Assad regime. Such, however, is not the case, as we now see, since the 27th of November, a restoration in the fortunes of the al-Qaeda affiliates that continue to plague the government and the people of Syria. In this particular case, of course, we're talking about the Hayat Tam Shahrir organization. If I'm pronouncing that question that correctly, I refer to them as HTS in my own notes. But in this particular case, of course, they are coming back into this picture with a vengeance. Aleppo has fallen to them. Hama has fallen to them. They are not that far away from Homs. And in this particular case, Intel Slava has a good summary as to what exactly this means. Keep in mind that these are not little towns that have been taken over by these folks with not very much resistance coming to them from Assad's Syria Arab army. The SAA seems to have evaporated in terms of its strength of resistance for reasons unknown to me. I've been searching all of the usual expert sources on this sort of thing to give me an explanation to give to you as to why there hasn't been more resistance from Assad's army coming forth against these Takfiri terrorists. But nonetheless, it is quite obvious that the neocons are rearing their heads again in Syria. The Zionists are rearing their heads again in Syria. And it's quite obvious that CNN is quite glad to see this, as they are featuring some of the spokesmen of this Hayat Tam Shahrir organization, which, of course, has been officially designated by the United Nations as a terrorist group. Nonetheless, the neocons at CNN, playing right into the Israeli cards at this particular juncture, seem to think that this is a great move. The Intel Slava organization, a Russian-affiliated news agency, tells us that after the fall of Hama, the next major city on the militants' path is in Homs, also the capital of the province of the same name. The two cities are separated by less than 40 kilometers of the M5 road and a couple of small towns, Er Rastan and Tal Bissa. Rastan is easy to defend due to its location and terrain. The city is located on the Asi River facing the militants and is protected from the northwestern flank by a wide reservoir. It was the inability of the Syrian army to hold the flanks near Hama that caused the surrender of the city, which they had recently managed to recapture from the militants who had entered and even set up defenses on the northern outskirts. Er Rastan is partially protected from this problem, but given that we are talking about the Syrian army, we will not undertake to make any predictions, says Intel Slava. If the militants reach Homs, and the last time I checked, folks, they're about 6 kilometers away from that city, if the militants reach it and capture it, they will have an open road not only to the south, to the capital of Syria, the city of Damascus, but also a convenient route to the west, to the coast, where key Russian military facilities are located. the naval base in Tartus, which will be about 80 kilometers away, and the Kamimim airfield in Latakia, which follows it. Thus, if the jihadists establish control over Homs, this in itself will not only cut off the coast and the Russian bases on it from the capital region of Damascus, but will also raise the question of the need to evacuate them. And the subsequent advance of the jihadists toward Damascus will raise the question of the existence of our ally, the Syrian state, as we have known it for the past few years, says Intel Slava. It is still unknown what specific real assistance Russia and Iran, already deeply mired in other conflicts, are ready to provide to Assad, so the Syrian army and its leadership need to take independent steps as soon as possible to stabilize the situation, which is close to critical. I would imagine that in truth it is absolutely already critical, but that comes to us from Intel Slava. Professor Jeffrey Sachs has a nice summation of the Syrian war and American involvement in it, which was also published by Ukraine Watch. We put that up on your roadmap. If you are unaware of the background and dynamics of the Syrian war and U.S. involvement, check out this insightful summary and analysis by Professor Sachs. Now, I've taken a look at it. It won't take much of your time, but he provides a good contextual summary of exactly what is going on. And, of course, Iranian state media in the English language is posting a lot of material on the links, the known links for a very long period of time between these Takfiris, these Sunni Wahhabic extremists, many of which are offshoots of Al-Qaeda, and the Israelis, and the United States CIA. And we've also forgotten to mention up to this point Mr. Erdogan, with his own interest in that region in terms of coming up against Kurdish separatist movements in Syria, at the same time that he, like the United States, has an interest in taking what he can take in terms of Syrian grain and Syrian oil. So between Mr. Erdogan and the American CIA and the Kurds and these Takfiri organizations, strongly linked historically to Israeli and American intelligence, we see once again that although it was assumed that after 2019 that there was a reasonable degree of stability in that country, such is not the case. And certainly when we look at what Netanyahu is up to and his desire to divert attention from what he has been doing in Palestine, when you start looking at Netanyahu's alleged ceasefire reached supposedly with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, it is not an accident that all of a sudden Syria becomes a major, major issue again in the geopolitical roadmap. And once again, it's Israel, it's the American CIA, it's all of these Takfiri organizations, of which HTS is only the latest in terms of the acronym. Important to recognize that really all of these Takfiri organizations are offshoots of Sunni Wahhabic extremism and, of course, the Al-Qaeda organization, which the United States, despite its protests to the contrary, has been doing business with for a very, very long period of time. Add to that Erdogan and his desires, again, to steal Syrian oil and Syrian grain, and to take care of his own difficulties with these Kurdish separatist organizations, and you have a real mess on your hands and an opportunity for these neoconservatives and Zionists in the West to do the kinds of things they always enjoy doing, which is stirring up trouble, getting wars ignited or reignited, engaging in regime change activities, and all to the ultimate benefit of their ultimate benefactor, which is, of course, the Zionist state of Israel. So in this particular case, if you look at Press Television Iran today, you'll see a series of stories there on this very fact that there's been a long-standing relationship between these Takfiri terrorist organizations and Israeli and American intelligence. And once again, this has reared its head. I have one question that thus far no one has been able to answer, and that is, what has happened to the Syrian Arab Army? Alexander Mercuris was pointing out yesterday on the Duran that for those of us who are not familiar with the size of these areas that have been taken, Aleppo is a major city. Homs is a major city. Homs to the south of Hama is a major city. And so when you're looking at Aleppo, and you're looking at these other two cities south of Aleppo, you're talking about populations that involve millions of people. How is it that a force that, according to Alistair Crook, the last time I was looking at some of his figures, a force of Tok Furies that was estimated to number about 15,000 has been able to take over these major strategically placed metropolitan areas so quickly with virtually no resistance from the Syrian Arab Army? I don't really understand this, but this is the situation. And, of course, as we have already pointed out in this post from Intel Slava, if Homs falls to the Tok Furies, then, of course, we start looking to the West in regard to these Russian assets and in terms of the Kamaim Air Base and in terms of the TARDIS Naval Base that obviously the American neoconservatives and interventionists in the region desire to play havoc with. So this is where we are on that particular subject. Keep an eye on this one very, very closely. Ray McGovern has a post on Lou Rockwell today. It's entitled, "The Neocons Try Again in Syria." And then Sonia van der Ende for Strategic Culture has another one entitled, "The Second Front Has Been Activated in Syria." This is clearly what's going on here. And, of course, it is designed to complicate the situation for the Iranians and for Hezbollah. It is designed to create more complications for the Palestinians in terms of any hope that they might get a legitimate settlement out of Netanyahu and the Americans. Clearly, with Erdogan involved, this creates other difficulties in terms of the region and precisely what it may be in terms of Russian and Turkish relations as this whole thing continues to unfold. I don't have the answers to those questions, but these are the questions. And keep in mind on all of this in regard to land, in terms of water routes and water supply, in terms of oil and natural gas pipelines, and in terms of the whole desire of the Zionist and neoconservative community running American foreign policy to absolutely once and for all destroy the Fertile Crescent and to destroy the Shia Crescent stretching from Iran, of course, to Assad, Syria, all the way into Hezbollah-controlled southern Lebanon. And really, it's amazing just how fast all of this has been going when you consider the events since last October the 7th in regard to what was launched at that time, certainly by Hamas. And that situation now includes all of the struggles in southern Lebanon. We have absolutely no hope that I can see on the horizon for any kind of legitimate negotiation between Netanyahu's regime and the United States on the one hand and these various indigenous peoples in the region. And, of course, you can add to Syria all of the things that continue to go on in the Russian-Ukrainian war, not to mention the latest neocon mischief going on in both Georgia and in Romania, and we'll get to that very, very shortly. But to keep an eye on this, because it is clear that major things are afoot, and many assumptions that a lot of us had that Syria had achieved a certain level of stability since 2019, that obviously is not the case. And in this particular juncture, renewed questions are out there in regard to whether or not the Assad regime can survive. The commander of the Syrian Arab Army indicates that the withdrawal from Hamas is simply going to enable the SAA to regroup its forces and to engage in a major counteroffensive against these Tok Furies, augmented by Russian airstrikes. So we'll wait and see what happens. But at this particular juncture, as I've said before, no one really has been able to explain to me, none of the experts that I rely upon for advice in all of this, as to what has happened to the Syrian Arab Army, the SAA, which seemed to give up in Aleppo very quickly, which seemed to give up in Hamas very quickly, and now is struggling to hold on to Homs, where you have, as of the last time I received any reports, a distance of only approximately 6 kilometers between the front lines of these HTS forces and the Syrian Arab Army. So we shall see what happens. Okay, we go on to Georgia then, and what is presumably the latest neocon attempt to engage in a color revolution in that country. I have discovered that in terms of my roadmaps, that there were only a certain number of things that I could put up on the big board for you today, because I am limited to 4,000 characters. I came in at Via Cantata today at 3,998 characters, and so what I have up there on the big board, unless I switch something out later, is pretty much which, in terms of information, what you're going to see over the weekend. But in this particular case, the Duran has a major source of explanation and contextualization of this attempt to change the regime there in Georgia, and that presumably it is believed that these insurgents, who of course are Western agents, there isn't a doubt in anyone's mind that the CIA is involved in this, that the EU is involved in this, and the Georgian president's statements that she will not leave office, even though she lost the election, that she is not going to leave as required to do so on the 28th of December, that this has at least some of the makings of another Maidan operation, as was the case in Ukraine in 2014. But the Georgians do have a number of advantages, and among their advantages would seem to be the fact that the victorious party, the legitimately victorious party in the election, the Georgia Dream Party, has Ukraine on its mind as a primer for color revolution and for subversion and for the overthrow of an election where an American-backed, EU-backed, Zionist-backed candidate lost. Georgia Dream presumably understands very, very much so that they cannot give one inch to these people this time. Thus far, it would appear that the people on the streets who are demonstrating and whose activities bear all of the evidence of being financed by folks on the outside, that this is thus far a circumstance where the authorities have been able to hold their ground. By the way, in terms of arrests yesterday, I saw it reported with the name and with the face out on the street as she was being led off by the authorities there in Tbilisi, an employee of the American consulate in Tbilisi, who just decided to join up with these street demonstrators, right? Sure, there's no link between the neocons and the American government and what's going on in the streets there in Tbilisi. You can bet that the relationship is one-to-one. We'll be back. Eddie Arnold joins us with July, You're a Woman, from his 1970 album, Standing Alone. You're listening to the Dan Koff Report. I'll be right back from San Antonio, Texas.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
I'm sorry if I hurt you. I'll make it up day by day. Just say you love me like you used to, and make the world go away. Make the world go away, and get it off my shoulders. Say and make the world go away.
We are back. You're listening to the Dankoff Report on RBN, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, as Eddie Arnold tries to help us make the world go away. That was a big seller for him in 1965. You realize that that was almost 60 years ago. Rather amazing, folks, but that's the scoop. 1965, Eddie Arnold's Make the World Go Away. So we get back then to some discussions of what is going on internationally. Isn't it interesting that when you start talking about this whole business of elections and this whole business of free speech, democracy, whatever that's supposed to mean, and you start looking at all of these different things that go into discussing fairness of elections, media coverage of elections, and it's reached a point, of course, where the United States and the EU have been going to the well for a very long period of time in terms of overthrowing governments that they don't like. Governments that have been legitimately elected. This is an old practice, of course, with the American CIA, going back to its pivotal operation in Iran in 1953 with Operation Ajax, and then, of course, what happened a year later in Guatemala in 1954. But as we start looking at more contemporary times, whether you're looking at what happened to the Yanukovych regime in February of 2014, with the overthrow of his government, illegitimately so. He was legitimately elected. He was illegitimately overthrown. And this was no doubt an operation of American intelligence and the EU and NATO and some multinational corporations, of course, thrown in there as well, who wanted to profit by stealing Ukrainian natural resources And then when you add to that the encirclement of Putin and the ongoing attempts to make the Russian security situation even more tenuous after the broken promises made to Gorbachev, promises made, I assume, in good faith by James Baker and George Herbert Walker Bush at the time of the so-called end of the Cold War. But from the time of Bill Clinton onward, whether you're talking about expanding NATO's membership, encircling Russian borders, getting involved in illegal regime change activities, using NATO militarily, as Clinton did in bombing Serbia in 1999, that was the turning point in terms of where we are now. The problem is, the more you go to that well, the more obvious it becomes that that's what you're doing. And in this particular case, what is now happening in Georgia clearly reflects the obvious. And that is that ever since the Georgian parliament legitimately passed a law in regard to foreign NGOs operating in that country, all of a sudden this unrest has started. All of a sudden the unrest has become more serious. All of a sudden you have a president of Georgia who is French-born, as I understand it, who spent most of her life in France and only became a citizen of Georgia in 2004, she's now saying that she will refuse to abide by the results of the election, where her opponent, who is a Romanian nationalist, he's an anti-globalist, he's someone who, if you want to put it this way, is Romania first. This guy's name is Calin, C-A-L-I-N, Georgescu, an interesting fellow professionally in regard to his professional background and expertise, but he is just the latest European leader to emerge as someone leading a political movement that is anti-globalist, that wants to get out of the New World Order, that wants to get out of the European Union, that wants to get out of the regime change business or being used on behalf of the forces who are trying to engage in all of these activities at the behest of a drive toward world government. Now you have the Romanian Supreme Court wanting to have the results of the election frozen and yet to have another election. Now, that election may, in fact, be taking place on December the 8th. I've been trying to get absolute confirmation of this. But when you look at the original results of the Romanian election, there is not a doubt in my mind that Georgescu won that legitimately. And when you start looking at what is going on in Georgia, where in that particular case you have a French-born president with clear links to globalist elements who is refusing to leave office as of December 28th. These are both sparks for potential expansion of the Russian-Ukrainian conflict. Make no mistake about it, this is what it is. And so we read today that Belarus has agreed with Russia that in the second half of 2025, Oreshnik missiles are going to be introduced into Belarus, in case anybody has any ideas or tampering with them.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaze by Mynutra. Why is Hempaze better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like Hempaze. Hempaze contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy Hemp Paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
People often write to tell us
What has happened for them since starting Extendivite? Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
That old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw.
Yippee-yi-yay.
We are back. You're listening to the Dankoff Report on RBN on this December the 6th, 2024. We started at 1 p.m. Central Time. Wanted to apologize sometimes for my train of thought and my voice. I've got a really bad upper respiratory infection going, and I took some Benadryl last night, so I'm a little woozy, but I hope to get through this because I didn't want to cancel on you folks. I felt it was important enough to be on this broadcast today with everything that is going on globally. And so we will hang in there and do our best here until 2 o'clock this afternoon. I'm noticing, by the way, that Charles Ortel, who's a Wall Street analyst, has come forth to say that Joe Biden may regret having pardoned his son, because now his son Hunter is an invaluable witness in post-coup Ukraine cases. He can no longer rely on his Fifth Amendment right to silence regarding potential federal crimes since he's been pardoned. And Mr. Ortel's opinion is underscored by two former general counsels of the American House of Representatives. What will be particularly interesting in this case is to see where they zero in, and based upon press reports abroad, they're looking especially at the Burisma gas firm, secondarily at a Pentagon bioresearch contractor, where Hunter Biden got a lot of money in that situation. The name of that company is Metabiota. And in both instances, of course, this points to things Ukrainian, and we start talking about 500,000 people having lost their lives in this conflict subsequent to American involvement in an illegal coup d'etat. This all points to blatant criminality. And Alexander Mercurius was pointing out yesterday or 2 days ago at the Duran, it's not an accident that Joe Biden extended pardons to his son for anything that he may have done going all the way back to 2014. 2014, as you will recall, is when we had the American coup d'etat in Kiev. the Maidan coup, the Maidan revolution, subsequently had this horrible burning to death of all of these people in this Odessa trade union fire. What if subsequent testimony would link the President of the United States and his cronies up to that heinous activity? There are all kinds of other things there, of course, that await exposure. We will see what happens. And in regard to Romania, we were talking about that before the break. Georgescu, of course, in Romania, an independent candidate, he calls the Romanian Constitutional's court ruling to annul the first-round election results a coup. In this particular case, he has openly accused NATO and the European Union of being behind all of this, neglecting Romania's interests, and highlighting that American defense contractors are exploiting the war for profit. Sounds familiar? It certainly does, and I'm sure it's absolutely true. I have no difficulty whatsoever in believing that. By the way, I hope that you had an opportunity last night to avail yourself of the Tucker Carlson interview with the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov. It was I watched it and managed to find the best link to put on this roadmap for you in regard to the entire interview. And the reason it's the best link, it comes from Ukraine Watch in this case, is that they itemize via the absolute time timing of the interview. If you want to look up any subject that Mr. Lavrov was asked about and subsequently responded to, you can find it in what Ukraine Watch has put together for us. That's why it's on your roadmap. So, for example, I'm going to say some things about Alexei Navalny, the late Alexei Navalny's book, Patriot. I've read much of the book already. I'm going to do a reread of the book in the next day or two. And then I hope to have a book review out on that volume for VT Foreign Policy. If that happens, and then it will happen. If it happens in the next couple of days, I will make sure that RBN gets a chance to put that on their news page for you. But if you want to know what was said by Mr. Lavrov in regard to Tucker Carlson's questioning about the death of Alexei Navalny, this listing, for example, enables you to go directly to 39 minutes, 45 seconds to get Lavrov's, Mr. Lavrov's take on that particular situation. And his explanation was a very, very succinct and very, very interesting one as he refreshes our memory on a series of events that finally led to Navalny getting sick in an airplane over Russia, subsequently being allowed by the Russians to get on an aircraft for Germany, where the Germans were extending to Mr. Navalny the opportunity for medical treatment. In this particular case, when Navalny finally passed away, sadly, earlier this year in a Russian prison, the Germans had put out the spin that he had been poisoned by the Russians. Mr. Lavrov tells us, and you can check this with that exact place in the interview that Ukraine Watch lists for us, Mr. Lavrov was saying that the Russians simply asked the Germans to show the data, show the test results on this claim that Mr. Navalny had been poisoned. The Germans would not produce those results. According to Mr. Lavrov, they later gave them to the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Warfare, the OPCW. And in that case, the Russians subsequently approached the OPCW officially to ask, since this allegation had been made, to ask for the test results, which would provide some degree of a qualitative proof that, in fact, this man's later passing was due to systemic damage from poisoning. The OPCW refused to produce these results for the Russians and said that the Germans had told them not to give the test results to the Russians. It seems to me that there's something amiss with that. And, of course, we start getting into this whole business of Alexei Navalny. I've put on the roadmap under books the listing for the late Mr. Navalny's book, Patriot, a memoir. It is worth your time to read this book. You, of course, get the decision, get to make the decision as to whether you do or not, whether or not you have the time to read it. The book is 479 pages long, and it's divided into four parts. The first part of this division is entitled Near Death. The second part is Formation. The third part is The Work. And the last is his prison memoirs, his prison diary, as it were. And the book is well written. It will maintain your interest, I believe. The one thing that is striking about this book, to me, in the way of a predictable weakness in the book, is that at no point in this narrative does Navalny address all of these allegations in the international press that he had links to George Soros of the Open Society Foundation, potential links to other NGOs operating in Russia against the Putin regime. And last but not least, there's no mention on the part of Navalny that credible sources were claiming that he had been serving the American CIA during his activist tenure in Russia. I'm not saying that those charges are true or false, but nonetheless, those charges are well documented in the international media. No attempt to deal with any of that occurs in this book, to my knowledge, and I don't think that that's necessarily a surprise. The other thing that you'll notice if you do decide to read Navalny's book and you start looking for book reviews on it, I was already looking at various Western book reviews of this piece before I started reading it. Even the Washington Times does not mention any of this, any of these allegations against Navalny that might cause us to put a different spin in a different light on his allegations about Vladimir Putin and Vladimir Putin's Russia in this volume. I thought the Washington Times might at least make some sort of reference to the accusations about George Soros and the CIA and all these other things. They don't in their review. And when you start looking at the New York Times and the Washington Post and Bloomberg and the UK Guardian and all of these other outlets that have a predictable spin on something like this book, they don't disappoint. Their spin is predictable. It's the wonderful human rights campaigner and martyr against the evil, nefarious Vladimir Putin. That is the spin that one will take away after reading those reviews. But read the book. It is a very readable book. It is interesting. It raises a lot of questions. It's worth your time. And subsequent to that, avail yourself of the information that is out there. If you know where to look in regard to published articles that cause us to take a deep breath when it comes to this whole issue of just who this man really was. So that's all I'll say at this point. You'll have to await my book review for VT Foreign Policy to get a potentially a deeper crack at all of this. But that's basically where we are in regard to the Lavrov interview with Tucker Carlson last night. Carlson opened by asking him if he thought that the United States and Russia were at war. He did not indicate that he felt they are yet at war. I certainly felt throughout the interview that he has a strong concern that we may yet see a Russian-American war. He talked about Russia's message to the West through hypersonic weapons. You can find that section of the interview at 17 minutes and 47 seconds. Then conversation, is there a conversation happening between Russia and the U.S.? You can find that response at 23 minutes, 18 seconds. Here's an interesting one. I won't reveal to you what he said. I don't want to spoil the interview for you if you haven't already seen it. How many have died in the Ukraine-Russia war? He talked about that in minute 28. With 21 seconds, 28, 21. What would it take to end the war? What happened to Navalny? We've already addressed that one. He stated that Boris Johnson wants the war to continue. why Johnson would want this war to continue, why Boris Johnson played such a pivotal role in sabotaging the Istanbul talks. Mr. Lavrov, says that he doesn't really have a real idea as to what Johnson's motives were in all of this, but whether that's true or not, it was some version of that he actually came forth with. The Chinese-Russian alliance is discussed in this interview, sanctions on Russia. Who's making foreign policy decisions in the United States? There's an interesting one. 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 5 seconds to get at that. Without watching the interview, we all know, don't we, that it isn't Joe Biden, folks. This guy can't find his way around in Angola without being led around by the hand. When we ask ourselves what cabal installed this guy as president, what cabal decided that they had to pull the plug on him, what cabal has been involved in all these wars and revolutions and coup d'etats and so forth that have re-entered the picture of very quickly just in recent days and weeks, add Syria, add Georgia, add Romania to the list, it's quite obvious that the real question is going to be whether or not we can get to the 20th of January when Donald Trump is inaugurated to have any hope of some kind of world peace. Do I think Trump is a messianic figure? No, I don't. Do I trust him? No, I don't. Do I have a lot of problems with Donald Trump's neocon advisors and Zionist advisors? I sure do. That has been my biggest complaint about Donald Trump going all the way back to his first term as president of the United States and several of the worst things that he did, which included destroying the INF Treaty and which included the Soleimani assassination, arguably the most diabolical thing that Trump did in his first term at the behest of Zionist advisors and interests. But nonetheless, I think a lot of people have this feeling that with these absolute lunatics in the Biden White House, in the Biden staff State Department, that want to preserve their own legacy. What is that legacy supposed to be? Assassinations, coup d'etats, blowing billions of dollars in this worthless war backing Zelensky. What is the legacy of Joe Biden in regard to the economy of the United States and the move toward de-dollarization of the world economy? What is going on with that legacy? These lunatics apparently believe that starting a good war would help to preserve his legacy. Maybe it would, but I would prefer that we get to the 20th of January with a hope, however slight, that Donald Trump will prove more effective in dealing with this Russian-Ukrainian war than Mr. Biden, which would not take much. Having said that, I wanted to underscore that you have supposedly three different approaches being presented to Trump by his advisors in regard to how to approach negotiations with the Russians. Now you have J.D. Vance has one set of ideas. Richard Grenell has another set of ideas. General Keith Kellogg, whom Mr. Trump has nominated to be his special liaison, I guess, for purposes of dealing with this Ukrainian crisis. When you look through all of these, I have the very definite opinion that none of these things are going to fly with the Russians. Sergei Naryshkin, who is the head of the Russian SVR, or their Foreign Intelligence Service, he has basically said that, and I frankly agree with him. The United States and the EU started this mess, first of all, with this attempt at a color revolution in 2004, then this illegal coup d'etat in 2014 that has resulted in massive death and destruction of hundreds of thousands of innocent people. And all the United States has been doing since has just been pouring more weapons in there. Personally, I think the Russians are going to have to win this thing militarily and tell Mr. Trump that they're not buying any of these proposals from Vance, Grenell, or Kellogg. We will be back with the Dan Karff Report in our final minutes for San Antonio, Texas. Stay tuned.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full one-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion-activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Make the world go away and get off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away. Do you remember when you loved me before the world took me astray? If you do, then forgive me and make the world go away.
We're back. You're listening to the Dankoff Report on RBN in our final minutes, broadcasting live from San Antonio, Texas. I wanted to maybe conclude just briefly with a domestic story, but before I do, I was simply going to say in regard to things military related to the Russian-Ukrainian conflict, it would seem that the Russians, of course, continue to conduct their airstrikes throughout the country. Keep an eye on South Front for reports on this. In regard to the airstrikes, as well as what is happening along the conflict line, the latest dead for the Ukrainians in Kursk, according to the Russian Ministry of Defense, is 38,235 as they withdraw from that ill-fated incursion into Russia itself. The latest things going on, of course, in regard to the aftermath of the Oreshnik strike, in the Dnipro region of Ukraine, seems to have led to more reticence on the part of the Zelensky regime to continue firing these American TACAMS missiles into Russia proper. But keep an eye on the Zaporozhye-Kherson region. That is where it is generally believed that there is going to be a Russian offensive. What the buildup is there, what the configuration of forces happens to be, I'm going to keep an eye on that for you. I don't presently have any numbers in front of me, but all along the line of conflict, which is somewhere between 950 and 1,000 kilometers, the Russians are advancing to the tune of about 8 kilometers a day. The airstrikes continue. One fails to see how the United States can continue believing that pumping money and arms into that conflict is going to change what the results already are, and that is a Russian victory with the terms of the surrender yet to be determined. Not along the lines, I assume, of either Vance, Grinnell, or Kellogg. One domestic story here, just wanted to touch on, it's on your roadmap. This whole business of what was apparently the targeted assassination of the CEO of United Healthcare Wednesday morning in New York City. 5:45 in the morning, the CEO of United Healthcare leaves his hotel on foot. He crosses the street to enter the Hilton Hotel for what was a so-called investors conference involving his healthcare company, maybe other healthcare executives there. I don't know all the details about that, but he's shot in the back repeatedly with a 9mm pistol. We continue to await the profile on this killer that they are looking for. We don't know if he was a lone operator or if he had others involved with him. But nonetheless, it would seem that some real animosity toward the health insurance system may have had something to do with this one individual's motives. CNN tells us that there's a lot of maliciousness mentioned online in the aftermath of that murder. And one of the comments made was that my empathy is out of network. Does this mean more dangerous times ahead for CEOs of company and of companies and American governmental chiefs? We certainly hope not, but keep an eye on it. I think there's a lot more to that story than we are presently being told. See you next week. Take care.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the rebel madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.